I think we need more trials in the frontline setting. So there are trials planned with capecitabine. There was some disappointment that capecitabine in the second line therapy was a negative study. And it was a negative study technically in that it didn't meet its first endpoint, which is progression-free survival difference. However, it did double the response rate in the independent radiology review subset of patients from about 10% to 20%. And that rate is too low, 10% to 20%, to expect that to lead to a difference in progression-free survival. So I think there is activity even in second line. So the two things we need to study in short order are other combinations with bevacizumab and also the issue of should bevacizumab be continued after progression. Again, very similar to the Herceptin dilemma. And then it goes without saying that we need to look at this in the neoadjuvant and adjuvant setting as well, and certainly those trials are planned.
What are your thoughts about nab-paclitaxel, and what would it take for you to utilize that, for example, in combination with bevacizumab instead of paclitaxel and in other clinical settings?
I think nab-paclitaxel is a good alternative to paclitaxel. It seems to be a more active drug. I don't think we know the optimum schedule of that drug yet. It was tested in a Q3-week drug and had a little more neuropathy than standard paclitaxel, and there's been some more recent data looking at weekly schedules, and perhaps a 3-week on, 1 week off might even result in less neurotoxicity at a weekly schedule of 100 or 120 per week. So I don't think we've learned how to optimally use that drug, but I do think it is a better drug. And I think in someone that is symptomatic and you want a response, that's a better choice, quite frankly. I'm using it. And the question is now, can you extend that to combine it, say, with trastuzumab for HER2-positive patients or with Avastin? Personally, I think you probably could. But I would probably wait for the data, and that is going to be coming out, at least phase 2 data, make sure it's safe, and then ultimately phase 3 data will come out.
When you've used it in your practice, what kind of dose and schedule have you used?
I've actually used both of the tested dosing schedules. The standard 260 every 3 weeks is probably what I use more often, but I talk to patients about it, and some patients have actually been very concerned about the neurotoxicity, and I actually tend to use it at the lower dose, the 100 per meter squared weekly. I think that the response rates that were presented by Dr. Bloom in that study were on the lowish side, but it was a very heavily pretreated group of patients, and so I think that in someone whom neurotoxicity is a concern, I just go with the 100 per meter squared weekly.
How has that played out in your practice in terms of the shorter infusion time and the lack of need for premedication?
I can't comment much on my individual practice because, you know, we're fortunate in that we don't see patients with that much comorbid illness, but I think the big advantage there is that you don't have to use steroids. Of course, the shorter time is an advantage too. I mean, both of those are. But I have had patients in the past where the steroids were a big problem. Not only did they cause nuisance type side effects, but in patients with diabetes, they caused major problems. So that alone, I think, is a big advantage.